I get a little Rain Man with packing. Like, I'll pack and then check it again.
Yeah, I'm like that.
And then a third time. But my wife never has to worry. She doesn't worry about any of that shit because she knows I've checked it five times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, right. I'm the one who makes the travel plan. She's just like, let's just go.
Yeah.
We'll find a hotel. We won't find a hotel. No, it's New Year's Eve. We're not going to find a hotel.
I'm like that.
Yes, we will. It'll come to us.
That's what they say makes the perfect couples. If there's one exactly person who's casual about everything.
Well, that's
absolutely.
I think that's how
we
got to
be there. We got to go do this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Stand By with JJ and Francisco. I'm JJ. This is Francisco. We got a really fun episode today because we are joined by the voice of Goku in Dragon Ball Z, talented stand-up comedian, actor, and voice actor. Here is Peter Kalamis, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me, guys.
No,
appreciate
thanks
it.
For coming. Thanks for coming. By the way, I just wanted to say, like, I don't think you need to. I mean, obviously, you're JJ and I'm Francisco.
I think it's
pretty obvious. Yeah, like, even if people don't know you, like,
hey,
if they go, like, which one is JJ and which one is Francisco?
I mean, it's pretty obvious.
I don't think nobody's going to go with me, JJ, and
like,
you're
if you were at a restaurant and the meals were coming, I have something for Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm not going to die on that hill. I'm not going to die. I will accept that.
No, I mean, that's obvious.
My parents were people of the world. They might have wanted to name me Francisco.
True, I mean, it'd be a funny episode of something.
It's not likely. That
to be fair, you could still be a JJ.
I mean, I could, but yeah, but, yeah, but like in real JJ, life now.
So.
I mean, in a show, I
in
could.
Reality.
But thank right, you for coming. Sorry, just
thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Well, this is a man who's had many names.
I know. I mean, his voiceover credits are just. I was reading your Wikipedia page. You have a lot of them. I mean, it's amazing because I did voiceover, but like, cool. I mean, I've done voiceover, but nothing like you have. Like, I think I got lucky. Like, I got like a couple of things just because.
Okay.
The way I sound, but I think like.
Yeah.
I wanted to like. Are you like? Did you? Take like did you learn this you like as a profession or you did it by yourself or like
you know what I grew up fascinated with comedy in general but I remember watching like Monty Python when I was a kid, which is really big in Canada, and a lot of the British shows were really big in Canada growing up, and I used to turn on like a tape recorder and imitate the voices that they did. And then growing up watching like Carol Burnett and Rich Little and all these people, and I was fascinated by voices and stuff growing. It was just a fascination.
Yeah.
Any character thing that sounded different, looked different. Tim Conway becoming, you know, the old guy. And it's all of that shit was so fascinating to me. I just couldn't get enough of it. So it was just a sponge from when I was a kid.
That's great. So that's a thing, because I read that you also.
Can I just chime in and go, I've done voiceover too? I just wanted to brag.
On what?
I'm a voice of in Hot Wheels City. I'm in Hot Wheels City. We've got over 1 million views on YouTube.
Oh, okay. What do you do?
Yeah. So
of what?
I'm Elliot. I'm one of, they're like the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah,
this is I just want to say
thanks for
1 million views.
Thanks for that.
Million
Thank
views.
You.
Shake
million
your
views.
Head. Million views.
So off there, just bragging to our guest.
I mean, he's got like actual like credits.
I know.
He
sure does. JJ. And I'm sorry that I only listed one. I only listed Dragon Ball Z at the top,
and
we didn't rattle through them. But actually, the funny thing about our relationship is that it actually dates back to a poker game. We met initially at a poker game.
Oh,
yeah.
About 10 years ago, and then we
like
shared
rounders?
A flight.
Were you like rounders? Like the
no, it was like, it was a comic, so it was like a $2 max.
Oh, got it.
We got it.
Let's
be
that
clear
high.
Here. Nobody lost their rent. Well, some of them did.
Yeah.
They lose 20 bucks. That's going to
hurt.
That's
it for a comic. Yeah, that's a lot.
But it was quite funny timing in that, and then we ended up sharing a flight together. And we can't remember if it was Toronto to Vancouver or LA to Vancouver, but I feel Vancouver was the destination.
Yeah. I think so.
In the flight.
Because that's also where you live, or you have live here and you live in.
Yeah, Canadian, have a place here. So,
it was a lovely little back-to-back meeting, and then at the time you were recording, or actually it was just being released. Stargate Universe was just being released.
Right.
And so that's how I placed it about 10 years ago, I would say. And I managed to binge it and everything, and then we became internet friends, and
That's
and
great.
Since then, he's gone on to voice many other things, which I assume is what you were just doing this morning in L.A.
I was
recording
this morning, yeah.
Oh, right wow, on. Nice. Yeah.
And is it anything that you're allowed to tell us about, or are you still under an NDA?
Well, it's a character that I did on a show called Dragon Prince, and whether I'm supposed to say this or not, but the character is coming back for a I won't say how long or in what capacity.
Now you reveal it and the character gets killed off.
So, but the character's funny because he's a pirate, but he has two eye patches.
Oh, so that's funny. Right. That's funny.
So
I thought you were going to do – I thought you were here just to record the commercials for Pollo Loco. Because you can do the great voice because I saw some of your stand-up and you had like –
The Pollo Loco
like
bit.
Pollo Loco
once,
bit,
once I had a voice audition, it was for Pollo Loco.
Oh, really?
And I didn't get it and I was like, maybe they know.
Oh, no.
Taking the piss out of him like every week.
Yeah.
Maybe they know.
Which is very funny.
I love that routine as well. Everybody flock to YouTube and check out some of Peter's stand-up. This is what we're referring to, which I've seen you perform it in Canada.
Yeah.
So I don't know what other versions are out there. But yeah, fantastic routine, which we're going to assume is how you first got discovered. And then were you a Toronto-based comedian at that point in your career, or were you always West Coast?
No, always Vancouver.
Always Vancouver.
I got out to Toronto a few times after I started headlining, and it was this is a travel show, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, this made no sense to me. It's like, hey, it's a travel show set in a comedy club. Next week is like a library going to talk about abortion.
I don't know what the connection is, but I'm going to roll with it. Yeah, you can talk about anything. And then at the end, just say like, and I traveled for it.
Any excuse. That's exactly
what my parents never traveled growing up. I mean, they were Greek. So they were scared of travel.
Oh, really?
All the Greeks, they pack up together in a small neighborhood, and that's it. They don't go except back to the homeland. They go back to the homeland every summer or two to the small village that they escaped from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they flock back, and then they go back to wherever they live. So that's what they did. So for me, getting into stand-up was great because I did get to travel, go to these places and cities that I'd never been to before. Some of them you would never want to go back to, but... Sometimes, you know, when you hop in a car and you do these early on in your career, there's a lot of driving to really shitty gigs. But still, I got to travel and, you know, it was really cool.
Yeah, that's the kind of freedom you get at stand-up comedy career.
And then you were like, because obviously you mentioned before that you started so early because you wanted to do this I read that you had your first stand-up in fourth grade or something like that. Which is crazy. I mean, like... Fourth grade, I was trying. I mean, I don't know what the hell I was trying to do. I was like trying not to get beat up or be, I don't know, like just doing like normal.
But
kid
that's
stuff.
Exactly how stand up skills start. You're trying not
True.
To get beat up. So
exactly.
You're trying
well,
to exactly.
Or I was doing
right
the beat. I mean, either that. I think I was a little bully when I was in Venezuela and then I moved to the US.
And then they started bullying me. You're a reformed asshole?
Yeah, yeah. I realized when I got here. I wouldn't have even thought that of you.
You're such a nice guy. It's pretty obvious.
I mean, I wasn't like crazy, like bully stuff. I mean,
El Francisco Loco.
Well, one kid they'd have to, one kid they had to change schools, but it wasn't because of me. It was the whole class. So.
And all he did was pull his pants down, and then everything else was out of my hands.
Ears. But anyways, but you started. So how does that? First of all, how was the set? That was your first set. So like,
it was in the classroom at school, and I always. Was joking around, the jokester.
Yeah.
And the teacher, if I remember her name correctly, I think it was Mrs. Chilton. And she had, I don't know whether she was like from Transylvania or something, but she had this, what I remember, this Transylvanian type accent. And she big nails, big hair and a bun with a thick accent like this. and this big medallion in the corner that was just way too large. Like it was enormous. And then at the last day or two of school where you don't do any work, they're ready to send you off to the summer vacation kind of thing. She goes, well, do you want to tell some jokes? I was like, yeah. So we had cake, and then I went up and did a set and then killed.
Wow.
Imitating her in front of her.
Oh, really?
And she loved it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it could have gone either way. But that was my first set. And I was like, and you come, I think we all remember our first set, whether it was good or great or medium, whatever. But I came out of that going, this is.
I like you
rush.
Had the,
right.
Like
I
it gave you that rush.
Yeah. Even at that age, I was like, that was adrenaline. Yeah. Just
no, that's amazing. Because 12 years ago, like I think knowing what you know so early, that's to me, that's a gift. You know, like because I found out I wanted to do this like after I graduated from college and university. Right. So I was like, that's one thing that I realized. But I think knowing it so early, that's always such a gift, you know, like, this is what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And well, especially to have that first one under your belt, because I knew early, I always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I definitely knew all my life, but I didn't have any kind of grade 4, grade 5, like, then I got up and talked shit, and it worked, and I knew.
Yeah.
So I had to wait till after university, but I always wanted to do that.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're right that if you just crush it early on, you do an early performance, you're like, this is what I'm
doing.
Well,
it was grade 4, and then the next set was, like, in university. So there's a big... But the whole time.
You wanted to melt that big set. Isn't
it's a whole 10 years.
Yeah, I killed back
it's a whole
10 grade.
Years of going, I'm going to revisit that, man.
But for me, a comedy club in Vancouver, Punchlines Comedy Club, which no longer exists, but they used to send comedians to do this lunch hour set for like a half an hour, and then they would invite people come up to tell a joke, and you'd win $25, $15, or $10 telling a joke. So I went up once and won like $15, and then that's it. I would go back. I think they would come every other week, every other Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then I would start writing material. So they'd say, come up, tell a joke, and I would start doing bits.
Mm.
And the MCs were always from the club, and a couple of them said, look, you got material. You should come down amateur night and give it a shot. So I finally did. And by the time I got to amateur night, I had a good 10 minutes of stuff that was kind of working. And then it was a nice start, a gentle start into... Because if you sometimes you head into a club, especially I found the East Coast guys a lot nastier than the West Coast guys. I don't know. Depends what club you're at, I guess.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just much more cutthroat there. They were never mean to me, but there was much more cutthroat.
Yes.
Cutthroat kind of attitude. So I got introduced very gently.
Nice. And so like you say you're from Vancouver, and then did you when you started doing stand up, what was your first big move? Did you have to traveled somewhere, or did you move somewhere to continue with a career? You always
stayed in Vancouver because the stand up led into voice work. And then when we used to do shows, that's when the film industry in Vancouver was really starting to take off.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of casting directors would come to the shows and look for
comics
local specifically to audition for commercials initially, but then it would kind of grow if you were doing well enough, it would branch into other things.
Nice.
And then we'd have different celebrities coming to the club. Like I remember I got to improvise with Robin Williams twice.
Ooh, how was that?
It was amazing.
I mean,
first time I was so nervous, too nervous. It was kind of like I had the best seat in the house because I was on stage with him. That's how I described it afterwards.
And he's such a force of nature.
It's just a million miles an hour, and you're trying to keep up, and you're nervous, and you're starstruck at the same time. But the second set, I kind of those nerves kind of had passed, and then I had a really good show with him, and we.
So the show was you and him just back and forth.
No, it was like four improvisers. He joined us. That night, right?
Nice.
And I remember it went really good, and I was, when you're throwing out ideas and you're rolling with it, it was really clicking.
Yeah.
And then afterwards backstage, he just came up to me and he goes, oh, you're very funny. and I was like, and to this day, I can hear those words come out of Rob Williams' mouth. You know?
I saw the only time I saw him was when I used to work here as a door guy at the comedy store.
Yeah.
And he came on a Sunday night, which was like potluck, which only the people that, then... And he went up and I think he went up and did like 20 or 25 minutes of stand up. And he did 40 characters.
Yeah.
It was just like, back and forth. Back. I mean, I was like impressed. I was like, wow, this is like just like such a natural thing that you're born with. I don't know, like how just going back. And then he was really nice. He took a picture.
I took a picture
with him at the end, stuff like that. So I could imagine just being with him. Performing with him.
At one point, I had been hired to teach this comedy class at the club, and it was this 8-week course, and then we had this graduation night at the end where it was people from all sorts of lines of work, like a real estate agent, a college student.
Yeah.
Some of them, one woman there was there because she had been sexually assaulted by her dentist, and her psychologist said, I want you to try stand up and to overcome whatever he thought she needed to overcome.
Outward bound kind of rehabilitation style.
No, the cross section of students were unbelievable. One of our students, Seth Rogen, taught Seth Rogen, right?
You taught Seth
Rogen?
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, I mean, this is the cross section. It was all over the place.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
So after 8 weeks, we had this graduation night where they all had 5 minutes, and they would bring friends and family in.
Yes.
So the club is packed.
Was this improv or stand up?
Stand up.
Okay. I did a similar club.
Yeah.
That one improv. Yeah.
So the club is jammed, and everybody's going a little bit over time. Like, it's, you know, that's her first time I see it, but everything's going great. Everybody's killing. Everybody's great. And the owner of the club runs out to me and he goes, okay, you got to fire these guys through. Robin showed up because he's filming a movie. He was filming Jumanji at the time.
Oh, wow.
Because he wants to go up.
Oh.
And I was like, look, I don't want to tell them that he's here because it's going to freak them out.
Yeah.
So I just said, hey, everybody, just try to stick to your time. And there was still, it took another hour and he stuck around.
Wow.
Right?
And this is after you did the improv?
I'd already improvised with him.
Okay, so you knew him a little bit.
So I knew him a little bit. But he stuck around. And at the very end, the show was already like 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
The crowd's tired. So then I got up and I go, yeah, okay, what am I going to do for an intro for him? Because, I mean,
what do you,
you just say his name and have everybody go,
there's
you don't
this
know.
Amateur backstage. This is what I did. As you guys are filing out.
This is what I did. I just go, listen, it's been a long night. We had this one student who had to leave the course halfway through for some family reasons. I don't think he's ready. But if you guys wouldn't mind indulging like one more person for graduation, and they're like, And I go, and his name is, I get searching for the name, Robin Williams. And the curtain opened and he came out. And I swear to God, there was about 3 solid seconds of complete
people
silence.
People realize, yeah.
Like they looked. They couldn't believe.
Is this
that
a TV monitor?
They couldn't believe. And then it was
like,
it was almost like angry clapping. Like they were so excited. And they on their feet, standing ovation for like 2 minutes before he could even start. He's like,
course.
Oh, no, please. And then he did an hour.
Oh, wow.
And then it hit the newspapers the next day. And then people started lining up at the club at like 4 p.m. for the next 2 weeks.
Wow.
Never to be seen again.
Yeah. Well, the following improv night, the following Wednesday, everybody was like, oh, he's going to come down. They were lined up at 3.
Jeez.
And he didn't show up. Wow. So the next weekend, or
that's
going to
be a thing
Wednesday,
for improv people. I'm like, can you give me a suggestion? Bring Robin Williams out.
That was pretty much it. He's not there, and you just try to get through the show because you know they're all pissed off.
Yeah.
Anyways. So he didn't show up, and then the following Wednesday, he did show up, and we're like, oh, you didn't show up last week? He goes, well, I was in a cab, I drove past, saw the lineup, and kept
too
going.
Too much, yeah. Wow.
He didn't want that much attention
that
to
much.
It.
That much, yeah.
So he would drop by every now and then for
that's
you know, after
awesome.
Jumanji
that's
filming
a really cool
and,
story.
And drop in.
That's amazing. That's
pretty sweet.
That's pretty cool. I mean, so you got, and did he remember you, like, when you introduced him or whatever?
I believe he did. We had a quick conversation about it. And then he used to drop by the Urban Well, which was a Tuesday night show that was ongoing. A lot of celebrities, when they would come into town, would do spots. Sarah Silverman and all sorts of people. And it was a really good. And he used to drop in there, too.
Nice.
Hanging out with it. And he was always, like you said, he was very nice. He was always, everybody wanted his photo, and I never saw him turn anybody down.
No,
he was
always
like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because he knew for them, it's, for him, it's the 100th, 200th photo of the night.
Of course.
But for them, it's a one-time photo that in their life they will never forget.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a valuable guy.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He was amazing.
Talent, you know, iconic talent.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, he's one of those guys that you felt the hue around him when he was around as well. You're like, there's some magic coming off this man.
Sure.
It's just
But you probably get that at a lot of the cons, too, right? Like, the people are like, oh, my God, it's Peter.
I do, and it's... you know,
by the way, cons, you mean the conference?
Because
I think people, like, I don't know if people.
The convicts. He's really popular with convicts.
When he goes, when he goes to prison, man, he's
prison
a popular guy.
You're right. At conventions, I've had people come up. And again, because of the character, like you were saying, you grew up with a lot of watching these particular characters, and it means a lot to a lot of people.
Our producer Brian here is holding on to the fanboyness.
Of course,
he grew up on Dragon Ball Z.
Maybe he's trying to say, like, remember I took a picture with you, and you don't remember who I am. No. I think this is how he's trying to say
that would
it.
Be hilarious.
Remember me?
Remember me? You turned down my picture, not like Robin Williams.
I even know you from more obscure, like X-Files.
X-Files,
which is one of my favorite shows of all time. X-Files and weirdly Psych. Psych, another one of my a huge fanboy of Psych.
Brian, do you have a question for Peter that you want to sit here and ask him?
Yeah, I'll just join you guys. No, it's fine.
Come over and ask this?
No.
But you're saying about the cons, and again, some people come up to the table, and I've had people like cry at the table, like because they get emotional because they say they grew up watching Dragon Ball Z with their dad, who's no longer around. So there's all these really emotional connections to the characters. And I mean, you can't take any credit for it. It's a job, and you're paid to do a voice, and it's great that people still
enjoy it and connect to it.
I mean, they haven't announced it yet. I'm going to do it anyways, but I'm going to be at LA Comic Con. I got an invite, so I'm going to be there.
Right on.
When is
table.
It?
December 3rd to 5th. December 3, 4, 5.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So perfect.
Yeah. So we'll be there with a table, bringing all this memorabilia and stuff, and doing signings and stuff like that. But those are always enjoy those things.
Amazing. When you do those things, what's the craziest thing that said that a fan would come up and go, "Will you
gotta sign
this?"
This.
You know, are we?
There's one called KameaCon, and that's just the Dragon Ball Z dedicated convention that happens in Dallas every year.
Yeah.
And the last one we were at. My buddy who voiced Vegeta, Brian Drummond, we had a table beside each other, and some guy comes up and with a full size VCR. The full double
like the
brick
original
size. Yeah.
The tape out.
This is it.
Oh, really?
This is it. So he goes, "Oh, you got to look inside." He goes, "I'm like, what?" He goes, and you push the flap in, and there's Dragon Ball Z and Cell 10 on a homemade tape that they played so much it got stuck. And they kept the whole VCR.
Wow.
And he brought the whole thing in. We signed the VCR with the tape still inside. And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, he was so happy
that
we got.
Fantastic.
So that was the weirdest kind of thing that
we had
signed.
That's
fantastic.
I guess you were holding that up.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, "What the fuck?
What are you?"
You got him to sign a VCR?
Yeah, sign a VCR.
That's I know. Dedication. So if he's traveling, is he checking that or is that carrying on?
Sir,
you got to check it. It's like, "No, I got to bring it in my lab because it's precious." You know what I mean?
Not local.
Right?
Yeah.
That's so cool. I mean, I think I haven't gotten to the level of have you gotten of feeling that, but I think that's really cool when you really people really connect with that and really like you see how they affected them in a positive way that you're like you said, it's like it's a job and you got hired to do it, but it's still you were part of it, so it's kind of cool to have all these people be like, "Hey, like you said, I watched this with my dad and now like it's so important to me." Which is, I think that's cool, you know.
Super
like last cool. Like last week, not Katsuya, but what's the name of the restaurant?
Sugarfish?
Like, no, it's one where they cook in front of you, but it's not a Benihana. It's another one in Encino.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
Encino, well, you're not getting a free commercial.
The name escapes me right now, but we were there, and there was this. There were three people there. And then just me and my wife and our daughter, right? And that was it because COVID and it was a limited seating and all this stuff. So we do the whole thing, and the guys, we're briefly chatting, being polite to each other and all. And now I don't know how it came up at the end of the lunch where my wife was like, "Oh, have you what cartoons?" Because it's asking about cartoons. I don't know how it came up, and she goes, "Oh, what cartoons are you watching?" And he goes, "Oh, Ed and Eddie and stuff." And I just went, "Oh, hello, Ed Boy." And he literally jumped out of his seat going, "Are you kidding me?"
Oh, man.
And it's like, well, you never know who's watched
of
it or
course.
Enjoyed it. Or
and the impact that.
And the impact, saying it. Like, again, the memories kind of like just fire back.
That's awesome.
So that's cool.
Yeah, because after shows, all I get was like, "Hey, you should keep trying."
Like, comedy's hard for everybody.
They always do that. It was like, "Yeah, you're good. You should do this." I was like, "I'm doing it.
Yeah,
I'm getting paid for this. I'm a professional stand-up comic."
I love that one too. I hope you make it someday. Yeah. Well, this is being a stand-up comedian.
Or you're there and it's like, the opener, the middle, and the headliner, and they come up and you're like, you've been emceeing, and you're like the headliner. "You're hilarious. Yeah. You're really good.
Yeah.
Have a good night." I'm trying. And what the hell?
Yeah. Or they're like, "You're amazing. You're great. You too.
Good for you.
Like, yeah, I was like, "Yeah, whatever."
Or there's the, "I can never do what you do." That's another passive kind of aggressive.
Have you guys ever gotten after you're done, the host comes up and they go, "Comedy's hard, people." Like they're saying to the audience, like, "It's hard. He didn't do great, but it's for you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I did do that when I was working here, and I would host the potluck. I would host the potluck, and this guy came and like he brought all his friends, And at that point, there wasn't that many people. So it was basically just
a show for him.
Just for him.
Yeah.
And he went up and like, and yeah, he didn't do good. I mean, he was on open mic or stuff like that. And when I went up, I was like, well, you see how common it is that even your friends and family don't laugh at you. Like, you see how hard it is. No, because I was trying to say of like you cannot make you can force people to laugh, you know. And even and especially when they're friends and family, they're even more nervous for you, so they won't laugh if you're struggling. So it's like, but my mom was like, you see how hard it is that because you know, if it's somebody that plays a piano or sings, even if they suck. You know, as an audience member, you can just be like, you know, right. You don't show it. But like right. with stand up, it's like literally like, and it's hard to, you can't force people to laugh.
I always like to do the opposite. I actually did this to you last week. I watched you rip the shit out of the gig here. And then when my friends come off with all that confidence, I always like to go, you'll get them next time. I did that to you last week. And that comes out every time. So now everybody knows that. But yes, that's what you're going to get.
But
better luck. Better luck.
You get them next time.
You get them.
Hey, but so you spend your time. Like, because we feel really lucky to get you while you're in Los Angeles, because we know you split your time a lot these days between Vancouver and LA,
right.
Don't you? Like,
yes.
And is that just based around work, or do you and your missus go, no, let's have some time off?
A little.
That's
little
based
bit
on health care.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a good. That's a good.
I would do the same.
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah. My heart's palpitating. Let's go back to Canada.
Time to limp back to Vancouver.
Yeah, that's very funny, man. So generally based on work, but overall,
right?
Overall, are you spending more time these days in LA or?
Well, last year and a half or 2 years have been. It's kind of impossible to gauge because film industry kind of, you know, almost shut down for like a good 8 or 9
right.
months
when
this pandemic hit in, March of 2020. And then there was nothing. There was nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we spent a good chunk of time in Vancouver then, close to family, close to friends and all that stuff because it was just too crazy. Mm-hmm. So in that time, I mean, we're getting down here more often. But
right on.
It's been, yeah, it is. It's just, yeah, you're chasing work.
Nice. Yeah, and outside of that commute, Vancouver, LA, like how often do you say are you firing out east? Because you're doing all these Comic-Con conventions and stuff,
right?
But does that keep your like travel schedule busy for going to the rest of North America?
I don't do nearly as much stand-up as I used to do. Like it's pretty limited now. I actually want to do more. I did a few sets when I was in Vancouver last time, and want to roll back into it a little more now.
Right.
I want to go back to, because you said that you didn't travel with your family, because they're Greeks, they don't travel as much.
Yeah.
And so there was no, first of all, two questions. There was no travel at all, like, or with your family when you're growing up? And also now that you have your daughter, are you traveling with her? Or is there any particular like vacations that you go to or that you have gone to, you know, with your family?
Or do you just go, I'm taking her to San Diego Comic-Con and she can entertain herself?
Yeah. No, we do like to travel and with the convention, sometimes you get, a really cool perk. Like I had a convention in the UK, about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So I said, well, this is the time. Why don't we fly into, it sounds so posh, you know, we're going to fly into Paris. So we flew into Paris and, you know, took our daughter up the Eiffel Tower and got these amazing pictures of her with her, got a little pink beret. And,
nice.
And then, you know, we hung out in Paris for a couple of days, which I had never been to. My wife had never been to. So it was incredible. And then took the channel, which they hate that you call it that, but the undersea train into London.
Yeah.
And then went to the convention after that. And I'm glad we did it because, I mean, the world locked down for essentially 2 years and counting after that. So we got to do this incredible trip.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, but she's been, my wife counted, I think she's been on like, if you count every single flight, like it, sometimes you have to connect, but if you count flights, I think she's at about 80 flights. She's like 12, so she's and she's like well versed in it now. She's like, okay,
she knows how
we're on a plane tomorrow. All right, she's got her headphones and her iPad, and
does
just
have,
that's
like,
awesome.
What is it?
Yeah,
platinum
she's ready to go.
Status? Or
yeah,
whatever.
She's got like
she
a
does.
Million
yeah,
line.
She does have points. Yeah. I wish they gave points to animals because we fly with our dogs. Like,
oh, really?
We've actually asked. Is there a point system? For the dogs?
that's a great thought. My dog has a bigger status than all of you and Coach.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. I think what you said remind me a little bit of like my dad back in Venezuela used to play like softball, like with like other like in this country club, like tournament stuff, and that was like our travel. Like we would like go to different country clubs, and while he was playing, like we would just enjoy the pool.
But
and
you got
whatever.
To go to different, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's like it'd be a great way for them to for us to like go places, and then he would do, you know, like so it's like kind of like what you were doing with your daughter, which is pretty cool. I enjoy that.
Yeah,
I want to do that if I have kids, so they can come with me to my gigs, and then they'll be
I mean, I'm guilty of that too. I love pairing up my holiday with my latest gig or whatever.
Sure.
If it's in a destination, I have trouble
separating. Everything works
the two
out great,
all the time. In fact, it used to become a bit of a bad habit because often if I come back from the road. If I'm dating somebody and I come back from the road, and often she's like, "Let's go on a little holiday," and I'm like, oh, "Let's stay home and order takeaway," instead. But you know, I've bored the other half because she's been waiting for me to come back from whatever New York or whatever. So I'm very guilty of that, but I can't help it. You're exhausted when you return from the road.
You are.
So you don't really want.
Of course, you don't. The last thing you want
to
do is
go to another hotel somewhere.
Especially the conventions too, like you. Are there for, 3 days straight at a table.
Yeah.
And again, like the Robin Williams thing I was using before about that you're meeting a whole bunch of hundreds of people, but for them it's the first time coming up. And a lot of times they stand like 10 feet away and you can tell they're nervous about coming up. They're intimidated or whatever. They're just scared.
Yeah.
A lot of people are very socially awkward at conventions.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people are whatever, nerdy, whatever you want to call them. But they're very nervous about talking to you. And sometimes you have to coax them over and say, hey, how you doing? And then they're, oh, I'm good. And then that opens the door for them to come over,
Is that the way it generally works? Is it generally 3 days at a convention when you travel to a convention?
Usually.
And then what kind of hours are you sit there? Because it is a contract, isn't it? Do you have to fulfill a contract when
you're
there?
Yeah, you do. You're expected to be at the tables because a lot of times they'll give you a guarantee of what you may make.
Right.
Certain conventions don't have any guarantees.
Do you get a bonus if people line up more or something like that? Like if you get more people lined up.
Right.
Well they don't, but you can make past your guarantee.
Yeah.
And sometimes, sometimes some people make substantially past that, and sometimes you don't make it. Mm-hmm. It's rare, but.
Right. And that must be when the pressure comes on because you'll have the promoter or booker or whatever we call them down there. Come on, get more people in here. I haven't even made my minimum yet.
I did one in Alabama and right away it didn't look good.
All right.
It was called Campacon.
Campacon?
It's in a campground. And we're going to bring people in.
We'll get some barbecue. Roll tie.
I don't know if
that's
going to
be heavily attended, is it?
Yeah.
It was in Alabama, so it was really difficult flight-wise to get to quickly. And then I flew, and then they lost my bag with all my gear in it. So I got there, and I didn't really have much. And it was literally tents, and the guy had, like, axe throwers. And there's one guy, I don't know, he was just a reptile guy. And he come by with, like, a 3-foot gator, and he goes, you want to kiss the gator? I swear to God. And I'm like, I don't want to kiss the gator. And he had it taped up going, come on, give him a little pick.
He's making Tiger King look good.
It was. And it was really weird. And then there was an accident on the highway, so nobody – they cut off the overpass that got to it. So nobody was there.
Oh, man.
I made, like, $200 on a guarantee that was, more than that.
Yeah.
And I felt really bad for the guy, but he was very nice. He said, no, he paid us out, and there was no problem.
But so when you make those things because people – go to those conferences, you have to pay a ticket to get in. That's how they make it? Or
usually, there's a fee to get into it, and then they charge for autographs.
Got it.
Individuals can charge kind of whatever they want. Like with really big-name people, some of the, it could be like 80. William Shatner autograph could be like, $100 for an autograph.
Oh,
And people line up, and he does as many as he wants to sign.
As artists, you guys all talk of, like, are you all, like, I want to say backstage, but elsewhere, I'm going, he overcharges. That's the deal of the Comic-Con there. That guy's only $20, but that guy, he charges $80. Fuck him. What an asshole.
There is a little bit of that, but I went to one in North Carolina 3 weeks ago. And
in North Carolina? My fiancé is from North Carolina.
Fayetteville.
Shout out to Francisco.
Well,
his fiancé.
She's not from there, but I did do a show. I did a stand-up show I think it was like 2 months ago in Fayetteville.
And big military.
Yeah, it's a big military
crowd,
thing.
Obviously, Fort Bragg, which was cool. I mean, I didn't have any time to look around. I actually wanted to, but I didn't get a chance. But that one was where the convention kind of set the price for all of us. It was consistent. And sometimes it's a little bit more than you want to charge, but they're like, oh, no, this is about how we want to set it up. And you're like, okay, you know, they have a you get a contract, right. And it's like this, it's like doing a gig, and it's like, okay, this is how it's set up, and are you okay with all this?
Yeah,
and you get a room, and you get a, you know, small it's a gig.
At a couple of comedy festivals that I've been to, sometimes when there's another comedian signing, you know, they all sign afterwards, or you know, you sign a whatever DVD or whatever. DVDs are long gone now. I've got like digital business cards, USBs that that I sell. But in the time,
nobody
I remember,
even uses that anymore. JJ.
What USBs? You
gotta, you gotta get a VCR.
No, everybody loves
the
VCR.
I
will sign VCRs.
I've got USBs and stuff. But I remember there was a comedian. I was at the Sydney Comedy Festival who was charging. This would be the DVD era. And it was like $30 for a DVD, but $45 for him to sign it. And that kind of made me feel gross. I just felt like, they're all lining up to buy your DVD anyway, just sign it for free. But he's like, oh, no, signature's an extra $15.
That was
another level of
At the conventions, it's almost the opposite of that, where they're paying for your signature on a lot of items they bring.
Yeah, because they bring something that's...
I mean, I always try to buy like things throughout the year for conventions where things like... pop figures or
your own VCRs.
Yeah, I bring my own VCRs. Stack of VCRs.
This is from my childhood. It's like, is this from Dragon Ball? No, this is my childhood. This is when I was like, my dad took me to practice. I'm just like, still, it's mine. That's cool. And when you're in those conferences, are you like, when you have free time, like, how do you spend your free time if you have any, like, when you travel.
Do you look forward to seeing the town? Or sometimes these convention halls are in the middle of nowhere.
Sometimes
they
are, yeah. But you always look at the other guest attendees, like the other celebrity, if you want to call them, attendees. And sometimes you see people that you know and are really fun. So it's like, you know, once the table shut down, it's like, okay, let's go drink. And then and it's, you know, it's hilarious and it's fun. And
that's
you go have a good time.
Very similar to stand-up comedy.
Yeah, the show's
over.
You look
at the bill and you're like, oh, this person and that person are there. I like to hang out with them. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. See, oh,
this person.
This is going to suck.
Yeah, that's...
I'm just going to go back to my room.
Yeah.
And is there anything if you want to check out, like, are you like a foodie? It's like, I want to check out the food here.
Yeah.
Or are you a coffee player? Or like, or he likes going to sports events or stuff like that. You know, like.
Here's one. Yeah. A few years back, it was me and another actor from Stargate. We're in just outside of Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it came up. And I was like, well, I always try, you know, I like the beer and wine and kind of thing. So if there's a local beer, I want to try that.
Yeah.
You know, something I haven't had before.
Yeah.
Or food that's localized. And I was like, well, what's Baltimore famous for? And I found out crab cakes.
Crabs, yeah. Mm. I'm from Maryland.
Okay. And then somebody told us, oh, no, you got to go to that restaurant. I can't remember the name right now. That Oprah Winfrey used to just pretty much live at that have these certain crab cakes that she's
like crazy.
Apparently,
for?
On a film, she used them to cater the film because she loved the food so much.
Wow.
And when she was a newscaster there, she would go there all the time. So it's world.
It was
so
a Color Purple, by the way.
I'm not sure. Actually, I'm not sure which one it was.
It'd be weird. Like such a serious film is like, here's some crab cakes.
But me and the other guy, you know, we hopped in an Uber and we went there, and it's like, oh, okay, we're going to go to Oprah Winfrey's crab cake place.
Yeah.
So it was like something different.
Yeah, that's fun. I like doing that. I like going to like eating, especially like when you're on the road, like most of the times I'm by myself. I'm like,
yeah.
Like I want to enjoy the food that's local
something,
from there.
Local,
like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Most of the times, especially when you go to small towns, you know, most of the times a lot of the chains are there, and I'm like, I don't want to eat the same fucking Chili's or Applebee's or whatever.
Every time we do this Dallas one, we make sure we always hit like a Texas barbecue, an authentic one with the barrels and the mops of barbecue sauce, that kind of slightly dirty place. Peanut shells on the ground.
Where you
want like that,
where
you're
you
like,
go,
that's
like,
the authentic stuff. So every time we go there, we always do the barbecue. So I like what you're saying. Like any food that's local, you want
to
try that.
Yeah. I feel like that's, I mean, especially for me, sometimes it's just when you have days to spend there, like, you know, like might as well use it to learn something. And also for stand up, it also works. But
educating yourself,
so you can, to start the show, to get them connected. And be
hey,
I ate
down
some of it
at your little restaurant today.
Yeah.
And then,
something like
that's always that's what I was gonna say too. Yep. It's always handy that to know that's your little bit of local.
Sure. Just something that they go like, oh, okay, you know, and then you can do whatever you want. But I feel like, and then when you travel, but you also travel internationally, right? And then is there any when you travel, are there anything that you learn from another country that you're like, man, I would love to bring this back to Vancouver or the U.S., or I wish they would do this here in North America? You know
what's big in Europe, and it's fantastic when you are traveling there? Breakfast. Like the full English breakfast.
I was
like, North America, they're just like, well, here's a Jimmy John sausage frozen. Here's a microwave right there, minute and a half.
Some oatmeal that's from like 1984.
They're horrible here. They're absolutely horrible. Yeah, yeah. But meanwhile, you go anywhere in Europe, that's expected, and not just like a little bit of shit. Like, it's a spread. Yes. And if they don't have it, like, people are upset there. So that's always great.
Did you try a bit of black pudding? A bit of breakfast black pudding in England? What were your thoughts?
Nope, not for me.
What's black pudding?
The main ingredient... Oh, it's delicious. I think it's delicious, but its main ingredient is congealed pig's blood.
Oh.
So it's like pig blood and oats and stuff, and it's done like a big... It's basically
like a
sausage.
Blood sausage? Right.
Like
a blood sausage.
Yeah, I guess. It's like a hardcore blood sausage. Yeah.
It does taste pretty bloody. It does. It's got that. It's
In Latin America, they have this thing called morcillas, which is like a, it's blood sausage. So it's basically the you eat it with when you eat chorizos, and then you have like the blood sausage. Yeah. So I like that, but that's like, I understand how heavy it is.
Yeah,
I
it's an acquired taste.
You gotta eat like a little bit, and then that's too much. You know.
You're right, though. There isn't a full American breakfast, is there? Pancakes, isn't there?
But that's not even from the hotel.
From the hotel when you're traveling and you don't want to have to spend $80 on breakfast.
True. I was in Italy just like 2 months.
It's fantastic.
I mean, like, I went to...
Coffee alone.
Yeah, just that. And then same thing. I remember we stayed, first city we went to was Alba, like in northern Italy by Torino.
Yeah.
And then, it was like, they had like... honey, like they had the honeycomb with the honey that you could like basically they just ripped it off from Winnie the Pooh, like, give me this shit. And I was like, and then they had, you know, obviously all the meats, you know, the prosciuttos and the hams and the cheeses and then eggs, and that was just that was like the breakfast.
We went to Italy a few years back, and our daughter was young, and I found these things called agroturismos. Mm-hmm. Which are, they're basically converted farmhouses, but they've been brought up to, you know, they got internet, flat screen TVs and all that. But if you look from the outside, they look all
like
authentic. Still chicken feathers in the walls, literally.
Oh, right.
Cool.
But they're amazing places to stay, and they have different ones all over the countryside, right? So if you ever go to Italy, I recommend, because they're not that much more expensive than a hotel, but the experience is incredible.
It's really cool, yeah.
And the first day we went, you know, dirt road, olive trees everywhere, and there's this, you know, young Italian gal waiting for us, and she's like, she's showing us around. You, oh, okay, here we have this, and we have breakfast in the morning, and and then there's this rack of Amarone wines and this big display. Amarone is like our favorite wine. That's why we kind of stayed there for the region. Okay. And she goes, and this is the Honesty Bar, and I'm like, what? You take a wine, you write your name, and I'm like,
what do you mean?
You just trust that we're gonna write our name? I see.
To charge for it?
You just, because they leave. You're the only ones there. And she goes, just grab a bottle and write your name down. And then we'll charge you later. Just at the Honesty Bar.
Wow.
Right? The Honesty Bar.
That's so cool.
And it was like, okay. And then we woke up the next day. We were the only ones in this hotel. It probably has like 10 or 12 little units in it.
Yeah.
Only ones there. And we went down for breakfast. And then I looked around the room and I was like, are there like another 20 people staying here? Like the spread was insane.
Was crazy, and you were the only
one. We're the only ones there. And I was like, "Are other people here?" No. can we get another espresso? See. And we must have had like 4 espressos.
Of course,
the best damn coffee right now. And it was like prosciutto and
just
oh
so
my
much.
God, figs and it was unbelievable.
Remember, when I was there, I felt, because I think we were there, the only ones there too, and I felt bad. I'm like, because they're like, and also there's like 3 people in their stations just standing there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I feel like, well, like I wanted to order from everything. Yeah, just
I better eat more.
Yeah, because I feel like they did all this shit.
I want to make them feel bad.
Yeah.
Very decadent.
Yeah, the breakfast is that's what I do realize.
Amazing.
Because, every time you come here, it's like, And then the ones that are good, you have to pay for it extra or something like that.
Right.
Like here in the U.S. and stuff like that. So, but if not, it's like you get the shit. I don't even eat those breakfasts.
They're
anymore.
Not good. They're like,
they're not good. Like
half heated up scrambled eggs, garbage.
They're
bacon.
Even like not even real. I mean, like the eggs are like some,
no,
I mean, they
no,
just
yeah, yeah,
put it some from some bag
no,
or something.
No, it's all like from a 7-Eleven or it's that kind of quality level of
yeah,
shit.
Yeah,
and you're like, I don't need this in the morning.
Which you feel like, that's going to make you
feel horrible.
They take it away before you're even done as well. They don't care. That happened to us this weekend. We were taking our time.
Really?
And the coffee, they had a coffee machine where it was gone. We couldn't even get coffee on the way out of this shitty, you know, shitty breakfast situation.
It's bad.
I've always heard at diners, like, don't never get scrambled eggs because they can just make them from like a powder. Get like a real, like a sunny side up because they have to give you a real egg. Like if you do scrambled, it can be just those garbage.
Oh, so always get like fried. Well,
get like a sunny side up or something. Yeah, because then at least you know it's a real egg they just cracked on. You know?
Wow. Mm. Jeez. Well, I'm not eating those. Anymore, fuck that.
We've got another question that we always ask our guests, but this is we just have to crowbar it in this situation because we've been riffing about all these other topics. But we love to know if our guests feel superstitious about things as they're traveling to their different destinations. If you have like lucky charms that you take with you, you know, we've had
a sentimental item.
There you go.
You know, that you love to bring with you.
While I taking a picture of my daughter. But I mean, I have a lot of those on my phone. But I have an actual paper.
What my dad used to have in his.
Yeah, that's lovely. It's in my travel bag, and you know, I look at her pretty little face every now and then. And, you know, it's a dad thing.
I think that might be my favorite answer so far. That is so. That's a lovely.
Yeah,
thing
because you know, you see her, and you know, we FaceTime if I'm away for a longer period of time. But
that's cool.
You know, every now and then you steal a look.
That's cool.
Especially going old school. It's not just on your phone which people don't do enough anymore.
And you don't have any superstitious or anything like that or lucky shirts or lucky stuff that you bring to the stand-up or to
a little
gig or something?
I get a little Rain Man with packing.
Okay.
Like I'll pack and then check it again.
Yeah, I'm
and
like
then
that.
A third time. But my wife never has to worry. She doesn't worry about any of that shit because she knows I've checked it 5 times.
Yeah.
Like I'm the one who makes a travel plan. She just like, let's just go.
Yeah.
We'll find a hotel. We won't find a hotel. New Year's Eve. We're not gonna find a hotel.
I'm like that.
Yes, we will. It'll come to us.
That's what they say makes the perfect couples. If there's
that's
one
exactly
person who's casual about everything.
Well, that's
absolutely.
I think that's how
we gotta
be
there. We gotta go do this.
Yep. I think that's how I'm with my fiancé too. I mean, I'm the same way. I'm like,
I
like to have my shit to be like, okay, this is what we. I mean, I realize also you have to learn to like
let go. Sometimes.
Let go and like
I'm learning that from her.
But also like, but then when shit works out because I fucking like,
exactly.
Like, you see,
yeah,
you see, if I didn't have this, it would have been stranded here. You know what I mean?
Do you have to point that out to her? Does she?
Oh yeah,
or
I point
does
it
she
out.
Often think, see what casual
I'll,
gets?
I'll point
us?
It out.
No,
casual.
Of course. Yeah.
You didn't come up the Eiffel Tower on your own.
Yeah.
I booked this shit in advance.
Yes. I like that. And also, that's why I tell people, too, like, when I went to Italy, too, we did all the, you know, tours to go to, like, and I recommend that. I think people are like, you want to go, fuck, what are you doing? You don't know, first time there, you want people that know what the hell's going on.
Sure.
And also, like, also, you're not doing lines, you're going quicker because you get, that's how you pay for it, to go quicker. But, like,
sure,
I recommend, like, if you're going, like, any, like, when we went to the Vatican or the Colosseum, you know, tours and, you know, and they're like, and they're like telling you stuff that you actually learn from, you know, you're actually paying attention, not stuff that you're like reading in Google or whatever, you know what I mean?
And I would try to, we went to Italy and I went on, you know, iTunes and downloaded this learning Italian cafe thing or something.
All right.
So I tried to learn basic stuff,
yeah,
which they appreciated, right?
Yeah.
And then we went to Paris. I was trying to remember all my schooling in Canada because we had to learn French, which you hated at the time, right? So I remember the family was asleep because of jet lag, and I went down for a beer, and there was a guy next to me, and I said, you know, est-ce que vous parlez anglais?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oui. And I was asking him if there's any restaurants that he could recommend close by. Oh, yeah, you know, you go to, and he says, your accent very strange. He says, there's no inflection at all.
Where are you
you're
from?
Very strange. Strange man. You're a very strange man.
That's hilarious. I did try to take I took Duolingo, you know, just to before I went to Italy, and
yeah,
I didn't learn anything. I took it for like 3 months. The only thing, because Duolingo only teaches you phrases that you're never gonna use.
Yeah,
like I only learned Louis beve el zucchero, which means he drinks the sugar. Like when the
wow, that's
like when the hell am I gonna use that? I was just hoping I would run into a thirsty diabetic guy and be like, oh, here it is.
He drinks the sugar.
Yeah, but it's like it's just not. I and also I don't know if it happened to you. One thing that I couldn't get when I was in Italy, I was like, they would keep saying, you know, prego means you're prego. Welcome.
Yeah.
But then they were, but we went to
places. Doesn't mean you're pregnant.
Yeah, no. But then we went to places, they're like, prego. And then they would say, prego. And then, and I'd be like confused because I was like, but then I realized it's just they use prego for a lot of stuff, or like saying like,
right,
welcome, or like come in, or like, you know,
right.
And then you're welcome. So it's right, like, or right, like, what do you need? Or, you know, it's just a lot of ways. But prego, I was very confused. I would try to speak Italian. I was like, yeah, and they'd be like, and then you start speaking English. They're like, yeah, you don't know anything.
Right.
Stop trying to learn anything. Just speak English.
Well, I remember when I went to Montreal, one of my first times, I tried to, again, use the French, and I think the cab driver just got angry with me.
That's a very Quebec thing.
They don't like the rest of English-speaking Canada all that much. Or a group of them, the large groups of them don't.
Yeah.
They're very kind of,
they're very,
by their own account, very isolated, and if you don't speak their Quebecois French,
because
they
it's
can
different
get really,
from France.
Right. No, it's
that
very different.
Very much traumatized me as a kid because I went to bilingual school in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
But in our big trip as we graduated, so it would have been junior high, we're graduating grade 9, was a trip to Quebec City and to all try French. And all I remember is trying to speak French there and them all going, just speak English. And just
right, because they hate Parisian French there.
Trying
they
to are, learn.
Again,
oh, really?
Big, they're, they don't, yeah. Little
and what's
down
the difference?
Parisian.
Is it accent or is
certain
it like
words and accent? A very basic example is in France, you know, gasoline is le pétrole.
Mm-hmm.
In Quebec, le gaz. Okay. You know, one example, but just it multiply that 1,000 times.
Oh,
where
got it.
Where they've, I don't want to say bastardized the French
the original
version
French
of the language, and they've Canadianized or roughed it up or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you get there's lots of stories of English speaking Canadians going to Montreal. Not being treated as friendly as they would expect.
Yeah,
entirely.
And of all these places that you travel, is there any favorite destination that you have traveled, and also that if you had chance to perform in, like, is there a place that or any other city that you're like, oh, I love performing here, you know?
Yeah.
You know, two questions, I guess.
Right. I want to get to Australia. I was born in Australia, but I haven't been back. Right. I left very young, so I really want to go to Australia.
When did you leave in Australia?
I was like 3.
Oh, okay. So you were like,
no memory of it. But yeah. And I had to, a few years back, get my birth certificate from them.
Uh-huh.
Right.
My parents had, being Greek, they got a baptism.
It might
baptism.
Be handy with the world ending.
Yeah,
and
really.
You might, Australia might be, because even Vancouver's underwater right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good destination. My parents had like my baptism thing, and for Greeks, like, it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. It's not the same. Yeah, yeah. One's a hospital. You know, yeah, I don't care.
This is legalized documents.
Yeah,
no. This is just from their church.
So I had to call and get it changed, because actually, without making the story too long, I had to renew a driver's license.
Uh-huh. Right?
And they go, okay, well, where's your ID? And I said, well, here's a passport. And they go, well, no, we need a birth certificate. I was like, okay, here's my birth certificate. And it had my Greek name on it.
Uh-huh.
The one that my parents had.
Yeah.
The baptism. It said Panayoti. And they're like, doesn't match. And I go, so where do I do now?
Yeah.
Well, you have to change your name.
Oh.
I go, to what? To Peter. And I go, everything already says, my passport says Peter.
Yeah, yeah.
No, then you have to officially change your name and then come back to us. And I go, are you kidding? I just married somebody.
Oh,
and I want to take over their name.
Yeah.
So I had to go through a legal name change to change it to Peter, which I had gone through my entire life.
Yeah.
I had a passport and everything. So I had to call Australia to the Department of Births and Marriages. all one building.
Wow.
Births, marriages, one place. And you can only call like at 2 a.m. for the time change for it to be okay to converse with a human. And they were like, okay, Peter, this is what we need. We need a letter from a lawyer. Yeah. And then I would send it, and it'd be 2 months, 3 months go by, and then I'd call them and go, what we're missing is. And it took like about a year, and I finally got a Peter Klamas Australia
like
birth certificate.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's, and then So you were saying, so you were born there, but like in terms of traveling, like you say, you want to go back there?
I'd like to get to Australia. Yeah, yeah. Italy was probably the coolest trip.
You don't remember much from when you were under three.
Nothing. As far as performing in different places, I got to do a film once. It was a Canadian, Scottish co-production. So we did half of it in Canada, and I got to spend like a week in Scotland, which was phenomenal. I'd never been.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. And I arranged a comedy club set at The Stand.
Yep, that's where my career started.
Yeah, just really?
Yeah,
I started. I think I knew that.
I started at the Stand Comedy Club in Scotland. Yeah.
So this one was outside the Glasgow one. That's where that's where I did it. Which you've probably been to. And I went there and I literally got off the plane. Our plane was delayed. Landed, and the other actress was a friend of mine. And I was like, and she's like, "Oh, what are you gonna do?" Because we're jet lagged. And I said, "Well, I got a set up at a comedy club in like an hour." And she's like, "Oh, I'll come." So we went and. And it was great doing a set because you're so jet lagged, you're kind of punch drunk. And the comedians were hilarious. There was one guy there. He was East Indian. He's obviously grown up there. So he had this East Indian Glasgow, thick Glaskian accent.
Glaswegian
accent. And it was the strangest. I do voices, you know, for a living. And I could not take my eyes off. I'm like, that's the weirdest sound anything I've ever heard. But the comics there were hilarious.
It's very interesting in Scotland, too. Every ethnicity from all around the world, when they move to Scotland, they're learning English as their second language, but it's going to have a heavy Scottish lilt to it.
Yeah.
So when you meet these people, they start speaking English being their second
language.
No,
he runs out there. Who likes butter chicken? I love it! This doesn't match. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's very funny.
It is funny to see when, like, I even have a friend, one of my childhood friends, he moved to England, and then so he learned English over there with a British accent. So he's speaking
with a British accent,
with a little bit of British accent. But I'm like, what? It's so weird for him when I listen
to it. Like when you see a white guy speaking Mandarin or something, speaking perfect, like how a white guy can freak somebody out and he speak perfect Mandarin. Like, what the heck happened here? Something weird. Something's amiss.
I always like comics who have funny bits about traveling to other places. One of my favorite ones was Tim Reichert has a hilarious bit about him and his wife had gone to Italy years back, and then they wanted to walk into the Vatican, and he goes, and we got there, and there's a policeman there, and he's trying to tell us that my wife can't come in because her skirt is too short. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to tell her, and he's like, you cannot come, it's your... you say that you are too much slut. You're a whore, honey. You can't go to the Vatican. You're a whore. No whores in the Vatican.
Very clear.
Yes.
That's funny.
Well, buddy, we're winding this down.
Yeah.
Before we get to our final question, I obviously, on behalf of all your fans who are tuning in, I have to ask this question, which I said to you before the podcast. I'm scared to ask this because it feels like when you, as a comedian, when people walk up to us as stand-ups and go, tell us a joke then, etc. Right. But I know your fans are tuning in, and I was wondering, are there some quick voices you could rattle off for us, you know, that'll blow everybody's minds tuning in right now and make them all happy? I have to ask that on behalf of people. I feel shame.
Well, one thing is sometimes when you get an audition, you try to match it to a voice that you recognize from real life, whether it be politics or, you know, entertainment, whatever.
Is it? Oh, sorry. So I've been doing all my auditions wrong. I'm going to start. Now I'm going to do that.
No, there was a show a few years back called Crypto the Superdog, where it was Crypto the Superdog, but he had other superhero kind of dogs with him.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for Tail Terrier, and all I did was a Ross Perot.
Right.
Complete ripoff, and got the gig, but it was like, okay, here's what we're going to do now. And it was like, we love it. You know, really?
And they just, why did you pick, is it just, you just
like... He was a little Texas kind of terrier.
Okay.
And I just, the best thing for me is sometimes they give you a big description, and I don't know, I kind of read it.
Yeah.
But for me, if they give you a sketch of the character away,
when I see the
you're like, okay, well, that's what that guy thinks.
Okay.
So, that, and then, For Dragon Ball Z, when you do a series and you do it often, there's always like a reference line or something to bring you back to your voice ref.
Like when you take a break and
haven't been back for a few weeks. Oh, do you want us to play your ref? And you're like, sure. Or you have a certain phrase that you would do from a line that, you always remember for a weird reason.
That it clicks, yeah.
And for me, it was, for Goku, it was, that tub of lard was a good warm-up. for whatever reason.
That would get you going. Yeah, into the
okay,
riff.
Now I've centered back into the
into
voice.
That's so cool.
I can head back in.
That is cool. I've gotten that whole thing of like, I mean, the few times I got in there, like, hey, can you do this? Like,
yeah.
You know, they play what I played in the audition or whatever, and they're like, hey, can you just match that or whatever? You know?
Right.
But cool. This is cool. I'm very excited because now I'm like, hopefully I can use this too.
We just learned an extra little trick.
Yes, because I think it's from a professional, you know, because it is such a thing. I tell people, because people always go like, well, you do voice. I was like, I mean, I got lucky and I done a couple, but I never like, I cannot consider myself a professional, you know, because especially I don't do voices. I just do me and, you know, and like variations of me. I'm like, I don't have that ability of like what you do of like, going from one to the other, you know, and that's a skill that you're, but also just even the, just it's such a skill to do and the craft, you know, it's kind of like acting or like doing stand up. It's like, it's very hard. People don't realize it. You can just like go up and do some voices and you get it.
I did this Transformers TV thing, cartoon once, and it was a parrot character again, and it was kind of a Gilbert Gottfried ripoff.
Right?
Like, well, I need a cracker right now. You know, and it's like they roll with it. But the pirate voice that I did this morning, when I first read for it a few years back, it was a bastardized version of. I'm lisping because I'm missing a tooth. I had a tooth emergency about a year ago. I have a flipper thing to put in, but it affects my speech.
But you did it because of the pirates.
Yeah, the pirate. I'm committed.
Your method.
I've always wanted to work in a bingo hall. But the one this morning was a bastardized version of Barry Kennedy, who was a legendary Canadian comic and fighter pilot of all things, right? But he would talk like this, right? No, seriously. And he always had the best pilot stories, you know, the crazy stories. And so that turned into this pirate character, you know, a version of it. So you always draw upon growing up and people that you meet along the way and just go, you know, I think this character might be this guy mixed with this person. And they might sound like this.
That's awesome. That's very pretty cool.
Excellent, man. Well, you've been a fantastic guest, man. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to come and play with us here today. And our final question that we always like to ask our guests on the way out the door is, do you have one little piece of travel advice that you've held on? Maybe it was handed to you once upon a time, but that you love passing on to other people or just holding.
I think
it doesn't have to be one. It could be several if you want to.
I think you have three.
No. You know, I think people on their deathbed, maybe it's me speculating, but maybe say two things. They should have had more sex and traveled more. Mm-hmm. So one of those things maybe you can't control.
Yeah.
But the other one, if you have a chance to travel, do it. Don't hesitate, because you never know what could happen to you tomorrow or happen to the world tomorrow.
Yes.
I mean, look at us now.
Yes.
So when things open up again, get out there, experience this world, because there's a lot to see, a lot of beautiful
places. And you
learn
so much. I always tell people, like, I mean, especially like when you're little, I think, like, especially when you're young, that's the best time to travel, because you learn so much of how other people do it, how other cultures do it, but also you learn a lot from yourself too, because especially when you start traveling by yourself, you learn how to, like, you know, handle yourself and all this stuff. It's like, and it just makes you a smarter, more well.
And being in the States, I mean, it's such a big country. A lot of people get insulated here because there's so many places to go within the country to travel.
And so many atmospheres.
So I think if you try to travel internationally and just different cultures and foods and all that, just get out there and experience as much as you can.
Yeah. And right now it's so easy. Before, I mean, you had to fucking take a boat that would take like, 40 days, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you can go like when I went to Italy, you know, you're there the next day, you know, or
exactly.
Like, you know, so it's like people go like, oh, Italy. I'm like, yeah, it's not that. I mean, from New York is 6 hours. Like, relax,
exactly.
You know, so it's like you could do it. So it's like people just doing it. Once you get there, then you'll find out. And then
that's for sex as well. It's just doing it.
You just got to, you know what, just do it. Sometimes it's 6 hours. Sometimes you're not doing it right.
Sometimes you have to travel to it just to fuck. You know, man, but thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. It was great. And And yeah, you had the you're gonna be in the LA
LA Comic Con December 3, 4, 5 Yeah,
3, 4, 5 So check that out. And is there any social media that you want people to find you or follow you?
Instagram and Twitter. They're both at Peter Kalamas, first name, last name.
Okay.
But those are the two that I primarily use. I get confused by the other ones.
Right.
Nah, we all
I'm getting
do.
Old.
But there thank you go, you. Guys. Follow them, like and subscribe. Keep doing what you guys do out there. Give us comments and stuff as well. You know, fill it up. We're also looking for stories. If you guys got travel stories and stuff that you want to start asking, or we can start asking our guests and stuff. Mm-hmm. We're up for that too.
Yeah.
But Peter Kalamas,
well, thank
ladies and gentlemen, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.